Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
I want to take a minute and talk to you about one of our favorite sponsors on the show, Podcorn. Whether you're a business looking to get the word out about your brand or a new product, or you're a podcast trying to figure out how to monetize your show, there is no better place to do it than Podcorn. It is bananas easy. So easy, even Rick is able to do it. You simply look through the sponsorships, figure out which brands might be a good fit for your show, or if you're a show, you work with them, get your product uploaded, and find podcasts that everybody's listening to get the word out. So what are you waiting for? Head over to podcorn.com today to get started. That's podcorn.com today to get started. What is happening, gang? We are Jack today on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Pulling. In today's episode, we are going to dive deep into the AFC South. It's our continuation tour through all of the teams in the NFL's offseason. And you fans of the AFC South, particularly you people in a place called Indianapolis, have been pining to get the Hall of Famers' take on the Colts and some of their division rivals offseason. So this is where you hear it. I mean, this is going to be truly interesting. We get Bill's breakdown of what he thinks the Texans did, what the Titans did. And then this week, he actually spent some time with Urban Meyer down in Florida. So this, we're going to get some inside info into what Bill thinks about the Jags, the development of Trevor Lawrence, and how quickly they might be a threat in the division. So get ready. This is our look at the AFC South. But before we dive into the show, I wanted to take a minute to talk about one of our sponsors, BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, and it's the best way to place your bets. And best of all, it's free to sign up. So we've been saying this week over week, but it's true, more true now than ever. You got a hot NHL playoff season. You got a hot NBA playoff season. Lots of things happening in the world that you can bet on, and there's no better place to do it than BetOnline. So head over to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device today to sign up and receive a free 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's right, a free 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit when you go over to betonline.ag or hit BetOnline from your mobile device. So what are you waiting for? All right, gang, this is our look at the AFC South. It is a fun one. All right, what is happening, gang? We have gotten through schedule release. My excitement for our NFC East episode has still not dissipated, and some of us might be playing a little hurt today, not just injured. Or how does that analogy go? Is injured is worse than hurt, right?
Yeah. You can play hurt, you can't play injured.
Yeah, so I think we're fighting through injury, but we're still playing in today's episode. But that's what Hall of Famers do. I think it's because we're excited to dive into the AFC East. How are we doing today, guys?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, we're there for you, and we're supporting Bill in his quest to get through this show.
All right, well, Rick, dive us into the AFC South. Let's do it.
Okay. So we're going to start with the Texans, Bill, which is really a tale of two platoons. When you look at them, their offense really put up good numbers, even though they were only 18th in points, which they averaged 24 points a game. But in terms of combined yards per play, they ranked first at 6.4. This is in the NFL first. First in passing yards per play at 8.3. Tied for second in rush yards at 5.0. they did give up 3.1 sacks. They were near the bottom in that. But then defense, the excellence turns to horror. In terms of points allowed, They were 27th. They gave up 29 points a game. Combined yards allowed, they were 30th at 416.8 yards. Passing yards allowed, they were 29th in the league, Bill, at 7.6 average. In rushing, they were dead last, with giving up 5.2 on every rush. And in sacks, they were ranked a tie for 28th, only recording 1.4. Here's how that comes out in the combined. The point differential came out to a minus 5, and the turnover margin per game was minus 0.2. So, obviously, Bill, Deshaun Watson lit it up last year, but who knows what the future holds there. What we do know is the D was terrible. Were there any bright spots amid the defensive rubble? And where do you see this team going?
Well, not only were there no bright spots, it only got worse in the offseason. Everybody's focusing on Deshaun Watson. There was a soap opera with respect to the hiring of the coach and the hiring of the general manager. They had employed a search firm who recommended two people as coach and general manager. They were actually in negotiations with those two people, both friends of mine, when a gentleman, I think his name is Sotheby, I could be wrong on that
good old Jack Easterby.
Yeah, Freudian slip there. Sotheby is a realty firm.
Exactly.
which the former people need in the worst way. Easterby stepped in and installed his own candidate, Nick Cassario, former colleague in New England, as general manager. And then after a long and prolonged, up and down coaching search, they finally decided on David Culley, whom many people believe to be a caretaker while this team goes through a complete rebuild. That remains to be seen. In terms of free agents lost, this is, if you're a Texan fan, you're going to recognize some of these names. If you're not, you won't, because they're basically role players, but they're essentially escapees from what is the...
I hear Clint Eastwood thinking about making an escape from Texas.
Possibly, yeah. Escape from Houston.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt, the most decorated player in franchise history. I can't say that this is unexpected. And this has nothing to do with the change in administration. J.J.'s 32 years old. He's been beset by many injuries over the past little while. And so he moved on. And he'll be fine. He'll play another year or two. And he's better off out of there. Will Fuller, whose reputation is greater than his production, got a $10 million guarantee from Miami to use the hackneyed phrase, take the top off the defense. Problem is, Will doesn't always bring the ball with him, and he's not on the field every week. But he certainly can take the top off the defense.
Exactly, yeah.
Carlos Watkins, now come the sort of guys that only their families and friends know played for the Texans. Carlos Watkins, a defensive end. Nick Martin, who was a center for a while. Darren Fells, tight end. Most people, follow the team would know those guys. A.J. McCarron, who never got in a game because he backed up Deshaun Watson. Brian Anger, the punter, who's well-traveled. Zach Fulton, Terrell Adams. Brennan Scarlett, who at one point in time was a decent outside linebacker. Cullen Gillespie, a fullback. Geno Stone, safety. Tyler Simmons, wide receiver. What Nick Cassario did was the first thing that I was taught by George Paterno many, many years ago, far more years than I care to remember, as a young college coach. And that was, the first thing you do when you come to a new program is get lined up, meaning you get 22 players and you line them up and you're able to go out on the field and snap the ball on opening day. It doesn't matter how you play. In that case, you look the part, and you look professional. So that's what Nick did. So he added Ryan Finley and Tyrod Taylor at quarterback, Mark Ingram at running back, Philip Lindsay at running back, Chris Connolly at wide receiver, Andre Roberts at wide receiver, Alex Eckerson at wide receiver, Dante Moncrief at wide receiver. These are all guys who are what we would term journeyman players, but they are professionals and they can line up and they can look like professionals. Farrell Brown, another well-traveled wide receiver, Ryan Izzo in a trade from the Patriots. He was Nick Caserio drafted him there. He did not have a very good rookie year. Marcus Cannon from the Patriots, Roderick Johnson, Justin McCray, offensive lineman, Lane Taylor, offensive guard, Justin Britt, offensive guard. So now they got an offense that can line up. And most of these guys are on one or two, in fact, the vast majority are on 1 or 2 year contracts. So these are not unlike the coach, placeholders probably, when it's all said and done. But they needed to do this. On defense, they changed to Tampa 2, which was the most shocking thing that I, when I heard that they hired Lovie Smith as a defensive coordinator, I was shocked, because this is a franchise that during all the years prior was an absolute complete opposite of Tampa 2. We used Tampa 2 in Indianapolis and beat them quite frequently. They're right. Obviously in the same division, but they disdained it. So I don't know how you describe this. Perhaps that, you know, they've signed up the Iranian presidential guard to replace the Swiss guards in the Vatican, you know?
Hey, maybe Jack Easterby thought it was 2002 and not 2021, and this is not an expansion draft year.
Perhaps. So they brought in Shaq Lawson, who's a Tampa 2 defensive end. Derek Rivers, I'm not so sure he fits the mold. DeMarcus Walker certainly does. Malik Collins certainly does. Jamel Johnson certainly does. A linebacker named Camus Grigor-Hill, Jordan Jenkins, a linebacker, Christian Kirksey, a well-traveled linebacker, cornerback Terrence Mitchell, and Vernon Hargraves was re-signed. He's one of the few survivors, you know, to come back.
Well, wasn't he a Lovie guy from Tampa way back when?
Yes, he was. That's correct. Yes, Desmond King, who was exiled somewhere before he was picked up here.
To go into further exile.
But is a really good cover two corner, by the way. He'll do fine. Safety Terrence Brooks, punter Cam Johnson, long snapper John Weeks. So I'm joking about this, but Nick did a terrific job in getting people to line up and getting people who fit Lovie's system. Now, are they the kind of people you can win championships with? No. There's nobody here that resembles Dwight Freeney or Robert Mathis or Bob Sanders. But you know, that's only 3 to 4 players that they have to add. And over time, I think they'll be pretty good. The shock to my system was that they were going to Tampa too. I keep saying it over and over again, but I can't believe it. And Easterby going along with it is amazing to me, man. How could you come from New England, Caserio and Easterby, and adapt Indianapolis's defense? It just
just doesn't make any sense.
No, it's heresy.
Well, exactly. That's the good it is.
Yeah. Well, let's not do religious terms with Easterby.
Pardon me, that's correct.
Yes. God forbid.
I stand corrected.
And we already had the Vatican Swiss Guard. So
yeah, so there you go.
We are, that's one too many religious references.
Right.
Okay. They had no draft choices. That's the other part of this wreckage. they gave it all away in the trade for Laramie Tunsil, who people who like the Texans and who want to try and ameliorate the fact that it was a disaster area, try to tell you that Laramie Tunsil is an outstanding left tackle. He is not. He's a slightly better than a journeyman, and they paid way, way too much for him. They gave up essentially this year's draft to get him. So, you know, that was a bad trade. And then, unfortunately, Bill O'Brien, who I think is a terrific coach, was acting as the general manager, didn't have a lot of support in the franchise, and made that trade. I mean, they needed a left tackle, and you could argue that Laramie Tunsil was okay at left tackle, and he is, but certainly not at the price that they paid, and that ultimately cost Bill his job.
And how much of that is just the danger of having a head coach who's got a win-now mentality making long-term decisions for the franchise?
Look, I would not see that sort of narrative as necessarily the case. He's looking to fill a need, which is what every coach and general manager should do. What Bill didn't have was the kind of support system from the personnel side that said, yeah, Tunsil's available and he's on the market and he's a marginal red player, and so he'll fill the need, but absolutely don't give a one for him. And absolutely don't give multiple picks for him. And that's what needed to happen. And Bill needed someone who was able to sit there with him and say, look, I know you want the guy, but we can't bankrupt the franchise to get an average player because we're not that close. You know? You're never one player away. That's the moral of the story.
And Bill also, I mean, to me, with where the complexity of things and the breadth of knowledge and so on that is operating when you're at a high level in the NFL, for somebody to be head coach and general manager, I mean, I know how hard you worked to perfect your craft, but I don't know how you could have taken on another job and been the head coach of the Colts or the Bills. I mean, it just seems to me itself to be a recipe for disaster.
It's hard to do. If you're going to do it, you better have an incredible support staff on whichever side of the business your expertise does not lie. So if you're the head coach, you better have an incredible support staff who can help you make those decisions. And even there, in the case of New England, where that's the quintessential example of someone who wears two hats, up until last year, they really hadn't had very much success in the draft for about 6 years running. So, you know, it's hard to do. Okay, the Texans draft, Davis Mills, they did not have a one or a two. They drafted Davis Mills in the third round. This, again, was an absolute need pick. Davis Mills has a very bad knee. The reason he has, I think, 5 games as a starter at Stanford. He's got talent. He can throw the ball. He was a big recruit coming out of high school. But on television on draft day, David Shaw, his coach, said he needed to stay for another year. He's not ready to play right now. And the reason he came out was because that knee is going to shorten his career, say most of the medical people. So I think his thinking was, hey, I better get in while I still have some time left. Because the knee will deteriorate over time, or that's the history of those kind of injuries, I should say. And so they got themselves a reasonably good prospect. The question is, will he stay on the field and how often can he develop? Nico Collins, who they also took in the third round, is a big, powerful power receiver. And it would indicate West Coast offense, although we don't know, you know, in the end what they're going to play. We'll figure it out when they get on the field. But Nico is a power receiver, not a guy that you'd – well, I mean, he's a third rounder. He's got good hands. He's tough. He runs good routes. He's not fast. It's that simple. Brevin Jordan, the tight end from Miami, Florida, is the reverse. He's a fifth-round pick. He's not a blocker. He's not a guy that is a great detail guy. He's not a guy that's real physical, catching, running after the catch. But he does have good hands, and he's fast, and he runs routes. you know, runs pretty good routes. Many people compare him to the kid from North Carolina who went to Detroit.
Eric Ebron.
And that's not, I mean, that's not a, a flattering comparison.
No.
but I can see the similarities. I hope he has, you know, a little more want to than Eric Ebron. And then Garrick Rollo and is a linebacker, and Roy Lopez, a defensive tackle. Lopez, I've seen at Arizona, not bad. He'll fit for Lovey. He'll get up the field. I don't know Wallow. He's from TCU, but I can tell you they play a style similar to Tampa 2. It's actually a 3-3-5, but you have to be athletic to play it, so he fits the mold. But, you know, we'll see what develops here. None of these guys are world beaters, and we'll see how they how they do when it's all said and done. Their depth chart mirrors what Rick talked about, an offense that's reasonably good, assuming Deshaun Watson is back, which is a big assumption. David Johnson at running back and Philip Lindsay and Mark Ingram, okay. Brandon Cooks at wide receiver, Randall Cobb at wide receiver, Kiki QT at wide receiver, okay. Brandon Cooks can take the top off the defense. He, too, is not a guy that he, I mean, he's very well traveled. I think largely because he gets more money than his production finally adds up to, and people kind of say, well, too much money to pay for this kind of production. Randall Cobb is a tough, hard-nosed, blue-collar slot player. Kiki QT is a poor man's Randall Cobb. Jordan Akins is at the tight end right now. Laramie Tunsil, Matt Sharping, Justin Britt at center, Marcus Cannon, and Titus Howard at right tackle. As I say, there's not a lot of all-stars there, but they can line up, and with Deshaun Watson, they'll be entertaining, and they'll move the ball, and they'll be respectable. On defense, this is anybody's guess, of course, because you don't know what's going to happen once they get on the field. But Vincent Taylor, Malik Collins, Charles Omenihu, and Whitney Mercilus will, you know, whether Mercilus moves to defensive end or only plays there in nickels or dime situations remains to be seen. But he's a very good pass rusher. Kirksey, Zach Cunningham, who does not fit, I don't think, for the Tampa 2, although he may be the middle linebacker. He's probably a good candidate. It's just popping into my mind that he can run a little bit and he's got some instinct about him. Bradley Roby comes over from another team, but he's suspended for a couple of games to start the season. Eric Murray, Justin Reed is a pretty good player, I think. Terrence Mitchell is a pretty good player. So, again, they lined up on defense. They did what they had to do. Kaimi Fairburn returns as the punter, as the kickoff man, I should say, and plays kicker Cameron Johnson, the punter. Kiki QT is a decent punt returner. Andre Roberts is a very good kick returner. And John Weeks is the long snapper. So it's this is not a good picture. And because Deshaun Watson's availability is, to say the least, questionable at this point, Lord help us if he's not there at quarterback. And if they're forced to trade him, they will have to get someone back who can play quarterback. So right. it's not a pretty picture.
How tough is this also? Because like in a lot of situations, right, you would see a lot of young talent on a team like this where the needle moving up would be, hey, these guys are, you know, improving. What is a positive outcome, especially if there's no Deshaun this season for this team?
A positive outcome is that you're going to get a very high draft choice.
Exactly. You're going to be excited for them next year, Scott.
Yeah, well, there you go. Hopefully they don't trade him for another left tackle.
Now, keep in mind that what they're doing, and I agree with this 100%, is making themselves professional. and probably setting about building a team around the kinds of players, the young player, quality players that you describe, none of which I see in the draft necessarily, in this draft. You know, we'll see. Right now, it doesn't look promising at all. And listen, in most cases, rebuilds are that way. I mean, that's the way it is. And I will say this, Nick knows how to operate. David Culley is a longtime assistant coach in the league, and he'll have his feet firmly planted on the ground. He's got Lovey to rely upon, not only on defense, but to help him out in the head coaching responsibilities. And so better days are ahead for this team, but just not this season.
Bill, there's always a colloquy about whether it's easier to move, and I've heard evidence that this is the case, from the bottom to the top more quickly than from the middle to the top. Which do you find the more difficult situation?
Well, they're both very difficult. You know, the trope that it's easier to go from 2-14 to 8-8, or now 9-7, or 7-9, or I'm sorry, 9-8.
9-8.
Yeah. It's just that. I mean, it's just nonsense. It's a talking point that people talk about. But the fact is, to go from 10-6 to 12-4 is much more difficult, because you now have a much more difficult schedule. You have much more difficult scheduling, because if you're 10-6, the TV networks say, okay, let's put these guys on, particularly if you got players that people want to see. You play at odd hours, on odd days. There's much more expectation depending on the market you're in. It can make life miserable for the players and the coaches. So it's much more difficult to take that last step from the first round of the playoffs or winning a division to getting to where you need to go to the big game. That's more difficult. But don't think it's easy to go from 2-14 to 9-7. It's not. Okay, with the Colts, some familiar names leave, but that's always the case with a team that has really good players, and the Colts do. So there's some guys that they need to sign long term, and as a result, people leave. So Danico Autry, who's 31 and a very solid defensive end, leaves. He goes to Tennessee in the division for 3 years with $9 million guaranteed. Jacoby Brissett, who's an excellent backup quarterback, and I don't know if he's landed anywhere yet.
He's in Miami.
He's in Miami, okay.
Yeah.
That's a great pickup for Miami. He's really a solid, solid player, and you could do a lot of things with him. And if you have to play six games with him, he's probably going to win at minimum three. I'd rather him than New Orleans guy every day of the week, because he takes care of the football and he makes solid plays. He can make plays with his feet. Anthony Walker Jr. was a really good middle linebacker. He's only 26. Good pickup by Cleveland. Undersized. Probably not a big market for him in other places, but a good player for the Colts nonetheless. Tavon Wilson, solid contributor in the defensive backfield, 31 years of age. He goes to San Francisco. And Tre'Mon Smith, a backup corner, goes to Houston.
So, hey, Bill, let me just sort of refresh our listeners, you know, in terms of last year, so they can see, you know, where the starting point was. The offense, this is, again, league-wide, ranked eighth in points per game with 27.9. They were tied for eighth in combined yards per play with 5.9, ninth in yards per pass with 7.3, 13th when it came to the average rush amount, which was 4.4. And then they protected well. They were ranked second, only giving up 1.2 sacks per game. On the defensive side of the ball, they, in terms of points allowed, they were tied for 11th at 22.9. The combined yards allowed, they were ninth at 335.9. Passing yards, they were tied for 19th. Rushing, though, they were great. They were number one against the rush, and they were 12th in terms of sacks recorded. It gave them a point differential of a little over plus five, and a turnover margin of plus 0.6 per game. So, you know, as you go through, when you get to the defense, you know, obviously strong against the run. Maybe you tell us a little bit about why the pass was more problematic, along with where you think the offense is headed.
Well, they added a number of players in the offseason, some of whom returned, which are the most critical elements of the whole thing, I think. The trade for Carson Wentz. Obviously, he's the starting quarterback, and he's back with Frank Reich. And Frank will get him straightened out. He'll have a line that can protect him. And I think you'll see the old Carson Wentz reemerge. Marlon Mack re-signs a one-year, $2 million contract. He did not get what he thought he might on the open market.
But that's a great get for the Colts.
That is a great get. I mean, that's absolutely right. Now, you add him to last year's number one choice, and now you got yourself and Raheem Hines.
Hines, Taylor. I mean, what are we talking about? Yeah,
we're talking about a damn good offensive backfield.
Yeah.
And Carson Wentz is the recipient of that. Hand the ball off, Carson. Don't worry about it.
Has anybody gone from a worse situation to a better situation overnight?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, sometimes you got to be a little bit lucky. And the second part of that is T.Y. Hilton, who returns and now makes Paris Campbell, if he's healthy and can play, not a spare part, but he makes that receiving core just complete. And again, he's like Marlon Mack. He's a beloved figure in Indianapolis. They added Julian Davenport, Eric Fisher. Pardon me.
We got to give it up to Bill for playing injured
today.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, I mean,
I wouldn't have shown up today.
Yeah, well, I
apologize, not to you guys, but to the fans, our listeners.
Scott wouldn't show up if he had a splinter in his fingers.
So. No, never.
I have a pretty good case of the airline flu, and you'll have to excuse my frequent outbursts of coughing and sneezing here. Offensive line, they had Julian Davenport, Sam Tevy, Chris Reed, and Eric Fisher. Eric Fisher probably ends up, when he gets healthy, starting, and he probably can play, as long as he's healthy, pretty close to the level that Anthony Costanzo played at. And if that's the case, they remain the number one offensive line in the league. So Carson Wentz is a happy man because his problems, or the problems that lack of talent and availability caused him in Philadelphia don't exist in Indianapolis. El-Kadim Muhammad came back, another great addition for the defense because he's a sacker, a big-time sacker. Antoine Woods at defensive tackle is a good backup piece. Xavier Rhodes returns for another year at corner. And Sean Davis, a good piece in the secondary, signed a one-year deal. This speaks to what a coach can do in terms of acquiring players. Carson Wentz, Marlon Mack, T.Y. Hilton, Eric Fisher, El-Kadim Muhammad, and Antoine Woods all could have gone other places. And they went to Indianapolis because of Frank Reich and Chris Ballard. It's that simple. So when you have a good front office and a good coach, you're going to attract players. And an owner that's willing to spend, as Jim Irsay is, There you go. You get good players. In the draft, again, excuse me, Quiddy Pay, outstanding prospect from Michigan. Not a lot of production, still learning the game. Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney numbers athletically. So where they were drafting the 21st pick, real good pick. Dale out of Bingo is injured. He's probably back mid-season. They took him in the second round. He's a long guy with real good edge speed and slipperiness. So what they did was they brought in two defensive ends who they hope will contribute for the next 6 or 8 years.
And without the injury, he would have been drafted a lot higher.
He would have been a first rounder, yeah.
Yeah.
He would have. Kellen Granson is a receiving tight end from Southern Methodist. I kind of like him. I like his route running ability. I like his hands. He's more of a pass catching tight end than anything else, but not bad. Sean Davis, a decent safety from Florida. Sam Ellinger, the quarterback from Texas, is an interesting selection. And in talking with Chris Ballard on my Sirius radio show, I said to him, might there be a goal line short yardage package for Mr. Ellinger at quarterback? And he laughed, and then we both started laughing, and he said, we don't give away any trade secrets, even if it's on your show. And I said, okay, I'll just speculate then.
Yeah, right.
By the way, Jacoby Brissett was their goal line and short yardage package last year. They did it out of necessity against Green Bay in a game where they should have been ahead by four touchdowns, and right. If they could have converted in the red zone,
yeah,
they finally did it in the second half and ended up winning the game. I think Ellinger will play the same role. Michael Strachan is a wide receiver from the College of Charleston, good young prospect, and Will Fries, a guard from Penn State, rounds out their draft choices. Phillip Rivers, of course, retired, which is too bad, but it opened the door for Carson Wentz. So here's how they line up on offense. Carson Wentz, Jonathan Taylor, T.Y. Hilton. Listen to this running back group. Jonathan Taylor, Marlon Mack, Nyheim Hines, Jordan Wilkins. Woo-wee!
That's the best in the league. I mean, it's not close.
Depth-wise, it's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
T.Y. Hilton, Michael Pittman, last year's second-round draft choice, who came in and really played well. Paris Campbell is penciled in there, but Paris has to, for all his talent, has to prove he can stay healthy. McLaurin was his teammate, far less heralded teammate at Ohio State. Paris was considered by all, including myself, to be the better prospect, although I was really high on McFarland. But he just can't get on the field because of injury. So, and he's not dogging it or anything. It's just bad luck. But he's got to get on the field. In his absence last year, Zach Pascal came on and really became a big-time contributor. The return of T.Y. Hilton, and if Paris Campbell is healthy, and Zach Pascal, thanks very much. That's a solid, solid group. Carson Wentz sleeps better at night knowing he has those guys.
Yeah.
Instead of people coming off the street who hadn't played football in 3 years.
Right.
Trying to play wide receiver in the National Football
League. When you were working at Kohl's the week before.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. It's not good to meet the offensive line for the first time in the huddle.
Jack Doyle returns at tight end. Mo Alie-Cox is a very sound back up there. They like Granson. I think, would there be a move for a veteran tight end at the right price? Yes, but they're not going to.
Could this be an Ertz spot, you think?
It could be. It could be. But I think Philadelphia's probably hanging on for thinking they're going to get a good buy. I'm not so sure that the Colts will do that. Zach Ertz at the right price, if he's on the market, fine. But not at a premium draft choice price. Because they like what they got there. Eric Fisher will step in at left tackle. Quentin Nelson, who's, you know, continues to work his way toward a gold jacket. Ryan Kelly, Mark Lewinsky, who's turned into a really nice right guard. And Braden Smith, who they're going to try and re-sign, turns out to be a solid right tackle and a worthy successor to Ryan Deem, who played there for 10 years with us. On defense, Ben Bonagu starts as the left defensive end. We'll see where Quay and Odabingo factor are in there. DeForest Buncher is a phenomenal three technique. It takes a while for three techniques to get noticed, because even in this day of Los Angeles, this guy who is the best in the league, probably the best defensive lineman in the league, they don't get a lot of headlines because you can't see them until you look at the film, unless they sack somebody or something like that. They're even hard for the director to find in a televised game. So Buckner does not get enough credit for what he does. Secondly, he was traded by San Francisco, so in the minds of some media, there's a stigma there, when in fact, there's no stigma at all. He's a great player. Grover Stewart is a solid nose tackle. Muhammad returns at the other end. And Kamiko Torre is coming off an injury. So we'll see where that one shakes out when it's all said and done. But between Pei, Bonagu, El-Kadin Muhammad, and Torre when he's back, that's a pretty solid group. Darius Leonard is the best weak side linebacker in the league, period, end of story. I don't want to hear about anybody else. He's head and shoulders over everybody. He makes plays. He covers linebacker. He covers backs. He covers wide receivers. He sacks the quarterback. There's only one like him. Let's go on. We'll go on with the defense. Zaire Franklin moves in at the middle linebacker spot. We'll see how that shakes out. Bobby Okereke has developed into a fine, strong linebacker and a multiple rush guy. Coach Everflus, their defensive coordinator, is a little more creative than we were with the very same defense, by the way. This is the same defense we played when, you know, we won 115 games or whatever it was. He's a little more creative than we were in terms of blitzing. And I think you have to be in this day and age, because there's many more wide open formations. And Okereke's turned it to be a really good player. And EJ Speed is a guy who can, you know, he's a good, solid player to have. Kenny Moore has developed into a fine left corner. Rock Yassin, who backs him up, is a great sub-package player. Kari Willis at strong safety has done a marvelous job. Julian Blackman came in as a rookie last year and just played lights out. And, of course, Xavier Rhodes comes back, and he's backed up by T.J. Carey. So this is a defense that was really good last year and has a chance to be even better this year. Rodrigo Blankenship is a solid place kicker. Rigoberto Sanchez is an excellent punter. Naheem Hines is a terrific punt returner. Isaiah Rogers is a terrific kickoff returner. And Luke Rhodes, the long snapper, is solid. So they have on defense, there are three key players in this defense that have to be, in essence, all pro for you to have a dominant defense. And they are, in this order, the three technique, the will linebacker, and the strong safety. If you have really good edge rushers, meaning they're pro bowlers as well, now you have five. And now you can be dominant. So think about the year that we won the Super Bowl. Up until that time, we never had had the dominant three technique, who's the most important man. And so we got Booger McFarland in a trade, and like that, we became dominant. Bob Sanders at the strong safety, and of course, the weak linebacker in those days was David Thornton and Cato June. They overlapped. They were not Pro Bowl type players, but excellent players. But the fact that we had Freeney and Mathis kind of overshadowed that, because they took over games. And then this group is the same way. The question is Kari Willis going to develop and Blackman going to develop into the kind of tandem that can be big time producers? I think the answer to that is yes. Blackman is already showing that, and I think Willis did too. So this is a defense that I think is going to be better than it was, and it was damn good. So the bottom line is, this team was one poor throw, the fourth down attempt for the touchdown instead of the field goal against Buffalo in Buffalo in the playoff game, because Rivers missed the crosser when he was wide open. The call was good. Don't argue with the call. Should he have taken the points? Probably in hindsight, yes. As Marv Levy used to say, if what you called didn't work, you should have called the other thing. But the bottom line is, the call was a good call. The player was wide open. The crosser was wide open. The quarterback missed the throw. So, and maybe a better player would have caught it too. You know, maybe an all-pro would have caught it. But they're one play away from advancing in the playoffs. And so they would have beaten on the road the team that went to the championship game. Now, do I think last year that they were as good as Kansas City? No, because I'm not sure that in Kansas City they would have had as good a chance to beat them as they might have in Indianapolis, and that wasn't going to happen. But were they good enough to go to the championship game? I don't think there's any question about that. So while obviously, you know, the horseshoe is tattooed on my left arm, right near my heart, and I was conflicted as hell in that playoff game.
We're not going to say where the buffalo is tattooed right now.
Yeah. The other arm.
All right, I'll let you go with that one. Yeah.
This is a team that is good enough. Now, Carson Wentz has to be the old Carson Wentz, and if he is, they're good enough. It's that simple.
Yeah.
This is a problem. This team is a problem in the AFC.
They are a game better than your metaphorical 10-6, but the way you see this team, and you know, with what they've done in the offseason, you see no problem in getting to, I mean, the next level is basically going almost all the way or all the way, and you believe they can do it.
I think they're capable of it. Now, you know, whether you do it or not remains, is affected by any number of things, the most important of which is injuries. But, you know, do they have the organization? Without question. Chris Ballard, I don't know if he got the Executive of the Year award. If he didn't, he should have. But he's in that category. Frank Reich is an incredible coach, incredibly forward-looking. Witness what they convinced their players to do in the off-season program. Frank talked with all of his players and said, "Look, if you come in for 11 consecutive days and give us everything you got, we won't have 11 on 11. We'll work only on individual and group work. And then it's over by in strength and conditioning. And then by Memorial Day, you're gone. We'll see you in July or August." And with blowback from the union and blowback from the NFL office, Jim Irsay did what he always did. Does, hey, I'm backing my coach and general manager 100%. They're going to do it. So that tells you where their mindset is. You know, when you get back T.Y. Hilton and you get back people like that who want to come back and play with this group and for this coach, that tells you a lot of what's going on. Am I biased? You bet I am.
Yeah.
You know, I've been with Frank Reich for 35 years. So
right, right.
And he now will have both tattoos as well.
He will. Yes, he will.
Yes, he will. And but it's a bias based on facts.
Yes.
So, you know, it is a very reasonable thing. And, you know, as you say, the fact that they're willing to do what other teams are not, it shows you what the players think of Frank Reich. So,
yeah.
You know.
So we want to take a break in the middle of the show to talk about a product we absolutely love. That's Got Stubs. Now that the world is opening up again, guys, and you can start thinking about going to sporting events, going to concerts, going to the theater, what did you guys miss the most? What do you guys want to go see as soon as you can?
First of all, I got to say, Scott, just having access to the ability to look out there, look all over the country, see things that you would love to do. I mean, this just, you know, this thing didn't exist. You're too young to remember this, Scott. But people couldn't do this. The only way you got to events was to stand out in front of stadiums or concert halls and hope somebody wasn't scalping too badly or gave you a real ticket. It wasn't a fake. So, I mean, the whole idea of this is great. One thing that jumped out at me was kind of local to your area, Scott, at the Birchmere in May. The Amish Outlaws are appearing.
Hey, look at that.
One of the great cover bands of all time. These, for those who don't know them, these are some guys from... I guess you'd call them straight out of Lancaster. and they're permanent Rumspringa, these guys.
Yeah, feel free to send all your hate mail, as per usual, to IF Bill Polian and reference Rick. If you've spent the entire time in COVID inside, it's awesome to know that the thing you want to do most is go to 8 people to the Birchmere and see somebody breaking Rumspringa.
Well, yeah. Hey, yeah, you asked. That's my fetch.
There you go. Bill, what would it be for you?
Please make sure you send that hate mail referencing Rick. You know,
yes.
I don't want to get caught up in all these obscure references which people seem to dislike. In any event, this is as sincere, as honest as I can be. One of the things that I have missed most during this long hiatus is live theater. And one of the things that I miss most is having the ability to go to New York, where we'd still have friends and relatives, and like we used to do in the old days, be able to go and see 3 or 4 shows in a 7-day span. Broadway is back and open, but tickets are so hard to come by, and you can't go on the come. You know, you can't hope that you'll go to the kiosk on Broadway and somebody will have some tickets for a matinee because you're spending a ton of money for the flights,
right,
and a ton and a half of money for the hotel room and all the rest. So knowing that you can plan a trip to New York, which revolves around Broadway, and if you happen to be a sports fan like myself, Yankee Stadium and Citi Field, or in the fall, when the fall season on Broadway is at its height, Giant Stadium, you're in paradise. So you have that opportunity to do that now that you otherwise would never have.
It's very true. Well, for all of your ticket needs, Got Stubs has got you covered. They're not like the big ticket brokers. That's 100% guarantee. They donate some of their proceeds to a local charity in Chicago. They're really great guys. So as you think about re-entering the universe, look no further than Got Stubs. They've got you covered, and eventually they will have your Broadway tickets. For me, I think it would be going down to Kiowa on Thursday, but that's probably a... It's tougher to get on the island this week than it is to actually get on the ocean course.
Yeah, that's very true. But now, don't forget, they got tickets to Wrigley Field, which is always the hottest ticket in Chicago. But Comiskey Park, or whatever it's named recently, I've lost track of that, is going to be pretty hot too. So that's, you know, if you're interested in going to the second city, which is a great trip.
Yeah.
There you go. Get your tickets to The Cubbies and the White Sox.
Exactly.
There you go. They're playing the Orioles in July, Rick.
Yeah, I know. Sox are hot. Maybe we'll make a trip of it, Scott.
There you go. Although I'm not sure I'm leaving the house. That's part of my other life. All right. Yeah. Well,
you gotta know Scott to understand that.
Though. Yeah. Well, there you go. All right. Well, for all your ticket needs, check out gotstubs.com. They've got you covered. And now to the rest of the show. All right, well let's go to the next interesting situation in Jacksonville.
So we're going down to Jacksonville now.
All right, we're headed to Jacksonville, and I spent some time with the newly minted head coach the other night, and really enjoyed it. And we had a lot of good talk, and he's on top of things. Urban Meyer, he knows what he's facing. Most importantly, knows what he doesn't know. Had a lot of questions about how to handle a long season and how to approach various management issues with the squad that don't occur at the college level. A lot of discussion about that. Got a good solid general manager with him. So in Trent Baalke, got Tom Gamble down there in the personnel department who was with me for a long time and who I think very highly of. So I think they're headed in the right direction.
So let me give you that tail of the tape from last year to see where they're starting. And of course, they ranked 30th in points per game at 19.1. They ranked 24th in combined yards per play, 26th in passing yards per play. They were 25th in sacks allowed. Defensively, it didn't get any better. It got worse. Points allowed per game, they were 31st. Same thing with yards allowed. They were tied for 23rd on yards per pass, 27th in rushing yards allowed. Wound up adding up to 31st in point differential with a minus 11.6 and a turnover margin of minus 0.6 per game. There's a reason you get to pick first in the draft. The Jags stats tell you the story. Tell us the rest of it. Bill, a good talk with Urban Meyer. Hey, maybe they'll have Tim Tebow at tight end. We'll see what happens.
We're not talking about that.
Okay, but that's it. That's it. You got to mention that, okay. All right, you're right. It's banned. It's banned.
Obligatory mention. Let's move on.
Right, exactly.
First of all, the record last year was by design. The previous general manager decided to tank, gutted the team way back when he made the Ramsey trade, trying to stack up for this particular year. Whether it was because he believed they'd get the quarterback or not remains to be seen. The fact it's immaterial now anyway, and so this was a tank job. And it cost, like all tank jobs, it cost a lot of good people, including my son, their jobs. And the end result will only, in fact, it cost virtually everybody their jobs. The end result will only be known 4 or 5 years down the road. But tanking almost never benefits anybody, really. It benefits the franchise sometimes long term. It did not in Cleveland. I the jury's out on whether it will here or not. The players that they lost are almost immaterial. Keelan Cole, decent wide receiver. Al Woods, defensive tackle. Chris Connolly, journeyman wide receiver. Mike Glennon, journeyman backup quarterback. Rasheen Melvin, a halfway decent corner. Eric Stolbert, tight end, Greg Maven, Kemalai Correa. I mean, there are no household names there. So Keenan Cole is probably the most productive guy. He's 28. He went to the Jets on a one-year deal at $5 million. I mean, that's the definition of a journeyman player.
Right.
Yeah.
And not to denigrate him. I mean, just that's where he falls.
Yeah, that's what you build a league on. So,
Hey, there's nothing wrong with the journeyman salary in the NFL.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'll be happy to be a journeyman at that price.
Sign me up.
They added a lot of players. Some of this I think, is the personnel department. Others of it are people that the coaching staff knows from other spots. This will smooth out over time. And I think there's some, they got some good guys here. And, you know, I mean, you could argue that they could not have been worse than what they were. And that's probably true. C.J. Beathard comes in as a backup quarterback. Carlos Hyde, who was played for Urban at Ohio State. The one area they have talent is at running back, but you always need a backup. Jamal Agnew, Philip Dorsett, Marvin Jones come in. Marvin Jones is the known quantity there, but he's, of course, got some mileage on him. Cam Robertson received the franchise tag. In looking at it, I'm not sure they had much of a choice there. I'm not sure that they want to sign him to a long-term deal. By the way, I didn't talk personnel with Urban, so, you know, he's not interested in my opinion, nor am I interested in giving it to him. But
that's what you get paid for.
Tyler Shafley, they signed an offensive guard. Adam Gostens as a defensive end. DeJuan Smoot, two-year deal, pretty solid defensive end. Jahal Ward, a defensive end. This, all of these signings, by the way, tell me that they're headed to the 3-4 area, power 3-4 or power 4-3 area, power defense. Malcolm Brown acquired in a trade with the Rams. Roy Robertson Harris, Daniel Ross, Damian Wilson, Sidney Jones re-signed. Damian Wilson re-signed. Shaquille Griffin comes over at corner from Jacksonville
from Seattle.
Seattle with $29 million guaranteed. You know, let's see. Let's see how it works out. If they're not planning on playing Seattle's defense, and it doesn't look like they are, I don't know if that's worth the money, but we'll find out. Rudy Ford, Rashawn Jenkins signs a $16 million guarantee at safety. Josh Jones re-signed with the Jaguars. So generally speaking, a mixed bag. The Shaquille Griffin deal, I mean, unless he's a real, you know, solid contributor, that's not a deal that you jump up and down about. But who cares about the cap money anyway? I mean, they're not going to be in any danger of being anywhere near the cap. So
they had lots of available space.
Yeah, they did, right. Okay, Trevor Lawrence, we know Urban said to me, in pure football speak the other night, there were some people who are not football people there standing and listening. And he said, well, you know, as you know, Bill, you never know until you know. So, but I think we're going to know pretty quickly. And I saw people kind of shaking their heads and I said, Urban, that's exactly right. Yeah, you get that. I couldn't agree more.
Right.
So
what?
But he's right. They don't know yet, but the trend is entirely positive. And I think in the long run, it will be positive as well. The other big thing that came from that shocked me was that the big story was Travis Etienne working at wide receiver. Well, first of all, Trevor was on a pitch count because his left shoulder was operated on. So they don't want to put any stress on his body until the shoulder is 100% healed up. And why not use Travis as a slot receiver? He can catch the ball. He runs really good routes. You got the big stud Robinson back there to tote the mail and do the heavy duty lifting. Why not? What's the big deal? Well, I guess it was a big deal. He's a running back. How can you put him at wide receiver? Easy. Just move him out there.
They also did this at Ohio State. It's not a surprise. You had the Curtis Samuels of the world.
Right,
they had
exactly.
Players like this who did this role.
That's exactly right. Tyson Campbell comes over from Georgia third-round draft choice. I'm sorry, second-rounder, 33rd pick. I think he's going to turn into a pretty good corner. He's got a lot of work to do. There's a lot of rough edges there, but I think he's going to turn into a good one. Walker Little comes in from Stanford. He was an opt-out last year, and he's got some injury history. But if he's healthy with the 45th pick in the draft, I think this was a good pick. It's a big if as to whether or not he's healthy. That's the key.
He has not played a lot of football.
No, he has not.
Yes, nope.
Andre Sisco, safety from Syracuse. This is a ball hawk who's probably in the early part of his career a situational safety who plays back and plays the ball and becomes a ball hawk. He's got to grow into the job, but there's a lot to like here. He's a playmaker, that's for sure, and you can never get enough of those. I really like Jay Toufili, the fourth-round pick. This is an active, tough, hard-nosed, I like football and I want to go knock you on your back guy. I really like this guy. I think he's going to become a good player. Jordan Smith comes from Alabama, Birmingham in the fourth round. Really good prospect as a defensive end. Luke Farrell is a blocking tight end from Ohio State. He's a complete tight end. You can attach him, and I'm certain he'll be pretty good, and he's probably better prepared to play tight end than the more heralded guy that they're thinking of signing. And Jalen Camp, a wide receiver from Georgia Tech. Frankly, I don't know very much about him. But I think, by and large, this was a really good draft. And they're feeling their way. Everybody has to get used to this is a new process, a new team, this is a learning year for everybody. So at the end of the year, we'll sit back and say, look, there was progress here. I think there's no question there's going to be progress. And at the end of the year, Urban will have a very detailed, solid going forward plan based upon what he's learned from his experience in the NFL this year. Can he coach? Without question. Is he a good football man? Without question. Did he hire a good staff? Without question. All of that is not an issue. So it's a question of how to handle 17 games, which he's never had to do before. And all of that is how to handle 3 preseason games, which he's never had to do before. So the preseason games were or Ohio U and Kent
right,
State.
Yeah. Right, so, yeah.
Exactly.
Akron every now and again.
Yeah. So all of that will be a learning curve for him, but it's not steep. And he, as I say, at the end of this year, he will have a very detailed plan going forward. And he'll know everybody on his squad, which obviously he doesn't know now.
How tough do you think the losing will be for these guys? Because ostensibly, Trevor Lawrence hadn't lost a regular game in high school or college. Urban didn't lose a lot in college. Is that something to be worried about?
No, it's not something to be worried about. It will eat at them. It will. It certainly won't. I don't think it will deflect either guy's. Confidence.
We got a fourth guest on the podcast.
Yeah,
today.
We had a cameo appearance today by Teddy Polian, our dog who's been away for a while, and she just came in to say hello.
Say, Dad, take some cough drops.
Yeah, the bottom line is that this is going to be a tough season, but there's an old axiom in football, tough times don't last, tough people do. And so you learn a lot from this. This is a voyage, this is a shakedown cruise, and you learn a lot from it.
So, Bill, in the past there have been outstanding college coaches that had a hard time making the transition from college to the pros. But Urban seems like the type of guy, you know him well, who, though he's facing something new and how you motivate players and what you do is different. He seems like the kind of guy who's A, so well respected, and B, the type of person he is, should be able to handle the transition.
Without question, he's won every place he's been. You know, he won at Bowling Green. He won at Utah. He won at Florida. He won at Ohio State. That's not an accident. And in a lot of those places, Utah and Bowling Green, he didn't have any recruiting advantages at all. And he knows talent. I mean, look at the people that he had at Florida. Tebow's probably one of the few that haven't made it in the National Football League. That's right. The irony of all of that.
Yeah.
At Ohio State, they kept turning out first-round draft choice off the first-round draft choice. So why would you not think that I jokingly said to him, it's a little more difficult. This was in a conversation about a year ago. It's a little more difficult at this level because you only have one draft choice. You know, you don't have 12 first round draft right. choices that you can give scholarships to every year.
Right.
It takes a little longer. And so, he's a great judge of talent. He's terrific handling the team. He's a tough, hard-nosed, realistic guy. And so he'll succeed. I don't have any doubt about that. The only reason he won't succeed was if he did not get the organizational support, and I'm certain that he will get the organizational support. And he's got this is the benefit of bringing in a head coach with a huge profile, and it's doubly beneficial in Florida, of course, because he was successful there at the university. Not a lot of people can come knocking on the door and say, hey, coach, you know, I'd like to talk to you about how you're approaching analytics with this particular third and goal situation. You know, that's not going to happen. Those kind of people don't get to have lunch with Coach Belichick and tell him how their analytics is showing him that he's not using the tight end enough. You know, and there are franchises where coaches without that kind of juice and reputation can be distracted and overridden by these hangers-on and wannabes and people with theories. So that's not going to happen with Urban. And by the way, one of his closest friends in football is a man named Belichick, who's given him a lot of good advice, I know. So everything's in place here. And the owner, Shad Khan, is a terrific man who really just wants to win. And so when you got that, I'd say more than half the battle. They've got a coach who can win. They got a quarterback who can win and an owner who wants to win. The rest is not easy. As Coach Levy said, winning is simple, but it isn't easy.
Right.
But they got most of the pieces in place.
Yep. All right.
Take us to Tennessee.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up. So another 11-5 team. And also excellent offensive numbers, not so good on the defensive side of the ball. They were fourth in points per game, at almost 30 points a game. In combined yards, they were ranked fifth, a little over 6 yards per attempt. In passing yards, Bill, they were ranked seventh at 7.5. In rushing, they were tied for second with a great running game at 5.0. And in sacks allowed, there was a three-way tie for fifth at 1.5. The defense, the numbers are not so good. In points allowed, they were 24th, giving up 27 points a game. In terms of yards, they were 28th, giving up almost 400 yards a game. In passing yards allowed, they were tied for 19th, giving up 7 yards per attempt. Rushing yards, they were 25th at 4.7. Sacks per game, they were ranked 29th, only recording 1.4. But overall, because of the offense, they wound up with a plus 2.6 point differential and a plus 0.06 turnover margin. So, Bill, the defense was not great. Talk about the offense was better. Tell us where they went from there, gains, losses, and your view of the future.
Well, the defense was not only not great, it was almost lousy. It couldn't do anything on third down because they had no rushers other than the outside linebacker from Boston College. And most of the people that they relinquished as free agents were on the defensive side of the ball. Adoree Jackson, Jadeveon Clowney, Daquan Jones, Malcolm Butler, Desmond King, all guys, Matt Dickerson, all guys that that did not get the job done on defense. And the most notable people that they lost in free agency were Jonnu Smith, who went to New England, and Corey Davis. Corey Davis was a bit of a surprise. He went to the Jets, but he was a first-rounder who did not live up to his potential. He played pretty well, but didn't move up to his potential. And, of course, Jonnu Smith, it was a good pickup for New England. And I'm kind of surprised that they let him go. But, you know, that's a decision they had to make. The guys that they added were basically backup guys. Kendall Lamb has a chance to start. Tyson Brallo is a backup guy, both offensive tackles. Denico Autry, he's coming over from the Colts, so that's a subtraction for the Colts and an addition for the Titans as a rusher. Jayon Brown, Bud Dupree. Now, here's the story on Bud Dupree. Without a running mate, he can be stalemated.
Right.
He can't beat people, can't beat double teams, he can't beat chips, things of that nature. With a running mate, such as J.J. Watt, or the kid that they have from Boston College, that'll be interesting.
So Landry is the key. He's got to stay healthy. No more pressure on Landry.
Exactly right. They add Janoris Jenkins. Kevin Johnson. Matthias Farley, good solid special teams guy. You know, I'm not sure I'd jump up and down with those deals, but these are guys that you know, they think fit better than the people they had. So you got to go with that. The draft, if he's healthy, Caleb Farley becomes a number one corner, and that's fine. You know, you hope that he's healthy. That's the bottom line. Dylan Raduns is young, developing, second round choice, offensive tackle. I think has a chance to be pretty good, but he's a ways away at this point in time. Monty Rice, Elijah Molden from Washington. Again, injury issues. I think it may have been an opt-out as well.
Everybody opt out at UW.
yeah, Coach Pete left and the team opted out. He's got a chance to be really pretty good. Des Fitzpatrick, I like as a fourth rounder, wide receiver from Louisville. And Rashad Weaver, defensive end from Pittsburgh. This is a guy with some ability. Numbers are not great, but he does. He's a playmaker. So they added some pieces, particularly Farley and Raduns, that I think will really help them. And Molden, I think if he's healthy, will really help them. So let's go to the depth chart. Ryan Tannehill, say no more. You know, he's good enough. Derrick Henry, yeah, maybe he's not going to play 10 years, but keep handing him the ball.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Now, the people that back him up, I don't think have proven that they can be championship backups. So we'll find out about that. I'm guessing they're in the market for a backup running back if I'm them.
Looking at the Eagles.
Yep. A.J. Brown, Josh Reynolds, Des Fitzpatrick. You're asking a lot of a rookie to step in at wide receiver. But, you know, A.J. Brown is pretty damn good. Josh Reynolds is pretty good. I think they're okay there. It's going to be hard to replace the tight end. Anthony Firkser is a solid player, but I don't know that you replace what Jonnu Smith gave you. And he had a connection with the quarterback. So that one was a little puzzling to me. Essentially, they kept Taylor Lewan and let the tight end go. They re-signed Taylor Lewan, who, you know, is a decent left tackle. Roger Saffold has found a home at guard. He was a heralded offensive tackle coming out. Many of us thought that he was not an offensive tackle. We were proven right. And to his credit, he moved to guard and has become an outstanding guard. Ben Jones at center is fine. Nate Davis, and they're penciling in Radunz as a possible starter. I'm not so sure that I think there's a ways to go there, but we'll see. That's a position that you want to keep an eye on, and the running back position is one that you want to keep an eye on, and the wide receiver position is one third wide receiver you want to keep an eye on, in terms of who can step in and really perform there.
But talent-wise on offense, this is definitely a step back a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I think so. On defense, Jeffrey Simmons, sound. Taher Tart at nose tackle and Daylon Mack, good combination. Autry, he's not a 3-4 defensive end, but he'll be good 4-3 outside rusher. Landry is their best player on defense for my money. Really good pass rusher, really good football player, playmaker, has to stay healthy. One of the reasons he hasn't is because people double-team him and beat on him all day because he's the only guy they had. So, you take a beating doing that. I like Jayon Brown as an inside linebacker. I like Rashawn Evans. Dupree steps in, and that gives Landry a running mate, and that was a good move. Jenkins has been a solid, if not outstanding, performer at corner. Amani Hooker is a solid performer at strong safety. Kevin Byard has really not taken the step beyond what he was 2 years ago when he had all those interceptions, but I think he's capable of it. It just depends on how things go. It's tough to be a ball hawk when there's nobody to rush the passer. That's what they were.
Right, yeah. Right.
If not statistically, at least in terms of how you rate people by the eye test, they were the worst third down defense in the league last year. So
right.
It's hard to be a great performer when, you know, people can pick you apart on third down because you don't have any rush. And then Farley, we said, has the makings of a great corner. He's as good a prospect as come along at that position in a while, albeit that he has a bad back. So that's the Titans depth chart. I would say right now, this is the Titans and the Colts, just like the old days, and right. fight it out for the division championship.
Yep.
But on paper, the Colts have a better roster than the Titans, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I never worry about on paper. If you ask me, do the Colts have many question marks? The answer would be not as many as the Titans. But, you know, we'll find out. As Boomer says, that's why they play the games.
Yep.
All right, gang. Well, that is our tour of the AFC South. As always, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Bet Online and Got Stubbs. If you have any questions for us, hit us up on IF Bill Polian on Twitter, and we will be sure to cover them in the show. Next week, we stay in the South, and we're heading to the ever-changing NFC South. Some things stay the same, but some things change. Thank you for playing injured today, Bill.
Hey, my pleasure. Glad to do it.
All right. Hey, Scott, I think we should get Ludens as our sponsor for Bill.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely.
Rick pitching on air today. Always nice.
There you go.
I'll give that a big endorsement.
All right, guys.
All right, everybody. Stay well. Take care of yourself. Talk to you next week.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium-iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.